talking 2026. It's hard to believe.
You know, the reality is that, like,
everybody buys it. It's just replenished better than everything else.
It's always in your face.
And we were conservative about our prediction in 2025, and I think that we nailed it.
I do think that that might impact the rejection rates.
Dip was disgusting. It was the bane of my existence.
Our third leg of the tripod, co-founder Andrew Lynch.
Calling all CPG shippers, truckers, and logistics pros. Welcome to the Truck Yeah Podcast, your ultimate cheat code for smarter shipping, smoother logistics, and dominating the shelf where it matters most. Buckle up. It's time to learn, laugh, and get your freight on.
Truck Yeah! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Zipline Logistics Podcast. My name is Jesse Jewett. Joined with me, as always, Teddy Lee Knox. Hello, Teddy.
Hello. How are you?
Wonderful. We got our favorite recurring guests.
Yay.
Some might call him our third leg of the tripod. Co-founder Andrew Lynch. Welcome back.
Hey-o. Thank you. I feel great as a third leg of the stool. I spent most of my teenage years as a third wheel. And I feel right at home.
Yeah. Well, you are at home here on the Truck Yeah Podcast. We're talking 2026. It's hard to believe we're finishing 2025 with a flourish. We are in the midst of Q4 2025. Holiday season, freight market, busy season, if you will, peak season of the freight market. But we're headed into 2026, and we wanted to bring you on again to talk about things. So we're going to talk about the freight market in general, specifically CPG, supply and demand, volumes, rejections, rates, and then retail buyers' responses. So right off the bat, Andrew, predictions for 2026. How do you see the market going? This time last year, we were talking probably the second half of 2025. Things were going to get really tight, and the demand was going to soar, and the supply was going to dip. I don't think we've quite hit that prediction, but what do you see for 2026?
We were conservative about our prediction in 2025, and I think that we nailed it. 2026, I'm kind of standing with my motif of like slow and steady improvement. So I do think that what will be unique about 2026 is that it'll be the first year since 2019 where supply, demand, pricing really behave the way that all of our, you know, modern supply chains were designed to behave. There's going to be predictability. There's going to be consistency. You know, I think that volume will grow, you know, from you know, what it appears is happening in the consumer marketplace and in manufacturing and you know, what seemed to be kind of the melody lines on the effect of the one big beautiful bill is that, you know, we'll see some manufacturing uptick and some industrial production uptick. So I think that we're going to see improving dynamics on the demand side, but very steady and, you know, very comfortable, nothing unpredictable, nothing, you know, no black swans. And then I think that we're going to continue to see due mostly to the capacity to enforce, not because of how many bad actors there are, but I think we're going to continue to see capacity, you know, kind of get whittled out of the system. But I think those two things are going to come together in a very slow and organized manner.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it'll feel for the first time a little bit more like a pre-COVID environment. That's my wish, hope, and prediction all in one.
This is a lovely picture. I like this.
Yeah.
Ooh, I was gonna, nice.
Can you peel back the supply side of things? You talked about enforcement. I know we saw our first, bump, the non-domicile CDL, well, I guess legislation, are we calling it? I don't know. Enforcement, yeah. Like you said, that was beginning of November, end of October, beginning of November. Was that when that first
yes.
wave
mm-hmm.
happened?
Yep.
And then now we're seeing recently, early December, we saw a kind of, for lack of a better term, crackdown on schools, if I'm not mistaken,
yep.
CDL, quote-unquote, schools that were issuing CDLs at a rapid pace to, as far as the entities are concerned, not qualified folks. So that was adding drivers into the supply side. And so the government or the forces that regulate these things, the regulatory bodies are saying, hey, we're gonna crack down on this. One, the non-domiciled CDLs, those are folks who don't live in the United States or maybe don't live in the States. Is it a combo of both?
Yeah. To maybe add clarity to the opinion on at least my opinion on the supply side is I think that the last 2 years, the story on the supply side has been washouts due to economic conditions.
Right.
Right. And that's still the case, kind of.
Yeah.
But I think by and large, that washout is sort of complete. Right. We've got I wouldn't say equilibrium, but we've got enough of a washout of capacity where when some of these peaks show up in demand, you see real tightness and you see, rates move, spot rates move, you see, kind of rejection rates go up. And that's a signal that, again, while we're not in like total equilibrium, that we're a lot closer than we've been in years.
Mm-hmm.
And then where I see there being, sort of catalyst for continued tightness, call it late 26, maybe even end of the year, is, as that non-domiciled CDL, enforcement starts to, I mean, look, it's, I think they're enforcing it as well as they can right now.
Yeah.
There just isn't enough labor in the, those kind of government institutions to go out and really, drop a hammer on this stuff.
Right.
But, as you see, the ICE and the immigration stuff taking place, and as you see the non-domiciled CDL enforcement taking place, and then, like you brought up, those MC number mills that are like, just cranking out carriers, and then also the chameleon carriers thing, which is really recent. I think that's maybe within the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Where the FMCSA has really started to dig into that. I think you're going to see like a high single digit percentage of decline in supply, and where that supply lives is what's key as far as like the broker performance space. Cause again, we don't compete against tender rejections and stuff like that. What we compete against is our competitors' behavior. Right.
Yeah.
And that's where Zipline wins, in whatever market we're in. And as you see those non-domiciled CDLs, those chameleon carrier CDLs and MCs and the immigration population, that generally leaves its exposure to the small and like very small carriers, right? Like, one truck to under five trucks.
Right.
And those carriers, right? That's that massive sort of fragmentation in the small carrier marketplace, which obviously makes up, 90%+ of the total capacity marketplace. What's maybe not unique to Zipline, but what I think is should be comforting to our clients, and what the message that we're giving to our clients is that's really not our population. We're not, we've always moved like kind of high value, high visibility stuff. So like that really, really tiny carrier population really isn't where we play.
Yeah.
And so, what I think you'll see when you look at like the performance of really, really large 3PLs and brokers, where their capacity teams, the kind of their whole play is like this high volume. They touch all of these little teeny tiny carriers. A lot of these little tiny carriers move almost all of their freight through the very large kind of top 10 3PLs. That as that capacity starts to disappear, whether legitimate or not, it's going to affect how those big guys perform.
Yeah.
And it's, it will create a rising tide for the entire marketplace just because those things obviously work on macro levels. But when it comes to performance, which is really the only thing that we care about at Zipline, I think there's danger for shippers that are really heavily exposed to like, not to like name names, but like, let's just say to like the heavy DFM guys, the really, really heavy, sort of automated marketplaces.
Yeah.
Or heavily automated marketplaces where, the primary mission, whether it's a bro, spitting into a Celsius can while, making 200 calls, or whether it's an AI, goal of that thing is to pick the cheapest truck. Right. And it always has been. And so, Yeah, I think that, you know, as we've sort of talked about, you know, over the last couple quarters of these predictions, it's really about the risk is not in price. The risk is in service. There's been a risk to service the last 6 months. And I think there's going to be a heavier and heavier risk to service as the months progress.
I think you bring up the point of like pre-2019 market. And when before that, I always think of the struggles of being a brokerage and the, I guess, reputation that came with it, which Zipline is not. And I think when everything happened with the tariffs, this is a very reactive industry as it is, but people were kind of scarred by what happened with the tariffs and not being able to get materials or imports and exports being more difficult. And I think when people learned about the non-domiciled, they kind of overcompensated and a lot of people went to asset-based only. And I think where that is going to go is it's going to actually impact the volumes and rejection rates because most people don't put all of their eggs in one basket. And I think that it's important to note that you have to have a diversified supply chain. And only using asset players can be difficult. We've heard a lot of partners say, too, that you need to have both. You need to be able to have network capacity that can handle anything and be and adjust quickly with the market. So I do think that with all of this, with, you know, impacts happening to the supply side, carriers leaving the marketplace, I do think that that might impact the rejection rates and overall volumes. And then just based off reestablishing what Zipline is, what 3PLs actually are, not just the ones spitting into Celsius cans. Is that the new group that we're identifying? Like,
well, nobody's dipping anymore, right? I know. So I was making a pre-COVID reference. Right now, it's all about the nicotine pouch.
It could come back. Yeah. It could come back with pre-COVID market rates.
I hope not. Dip was disgusting. It was the bane of my existence before we had cleaning staff at Zipline. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right, Teddy, about that. And I think it's a good point. I think it also, like, one, right, wrong, or indifferent. I think a lot of carriers a lot of shippers, especially on the larger end of things, really shifted their focus heavily towards assets because they knew that they could capture highly competitive rates, you know, like tracked against history. And whether they were highly competitive for like this specific marketplace is in question, but against history, they could say, hey, you know, we're going to spend less in 2025 than we spent in 2022 by shifting all this freight over to these asset guys, and they're going to drop trailers and it's going to be efficient. And like, yeah, those guys look like geniuses. It's like, you know, it'd be like being a stockbroker for the last 2 years. Like, yeah, dude, yeah, you look like a genius, right? And no matter what you did, the number went up, right? No matter what those guys did, the service stayed high. You know, they could continue to drive rates down. They could jam, you know, accessorials down people's throats and tell them to swallow it. But, you know, those folks, you know, hopefully they got promoted before, you know, this market fully shifts, because, you know, what looks like a genius move, especially with how prolonged this environment has been, is probably not gonna age that well as things start to turn. Because, you know, again, like, we still, you know, we can talk about all these shifts that are happening and they're, you know, they're marginal. It's, you know, a couple, you know, 3% here, 4% here. Maybe it's, you know, 5 to 7% on the non-domiciled and chameleon carriers. But like, when you zoom out, driving a truck is still an incredibly taxing job and not an attractive one to a younger demographic. Owning a trucking company still requires incredible cost and price demand, a discipline, and are exceedingly difficult to own and manage. Insurance costs continue to rise. Labor and parts costs continue to rise. Like, it is still really hard to be in trucking.
Yeah.
And the capacity is less elastic, I think, on the expansion side of things, as we have seen it be on the contraction side of things. Like, capacity is exiting the market faster and faster, and I think we'll continue to exit faster over the next, you know, couple quarters. And replacement capacity is not going to be quick to show up.
Right.
You know, and so that's going to continue. I think that hopefully that makes for a healthy operating environment, you know, for a longer term than, you know, just kind of these usual bull markets, as Freight Waves likes to call them.
I feel like we should have done like a little like remix of like, you know, podcasts that have happened this year, because what you just said just reminded me of the podcast with Larry Darlington, where we talk about CPG and bulk transit. And in it, he said the biggest mistake you can make is owning your own trucks. Yeah. It's not a good business decision. Now, he says it a little bit differently than that. So you should listen to it to hear it. But it's, you know, just one of those, you know, sort of someone who owns a company, not what he would advise.
Well, yeah. And you know, Ted, you know, put that through the lens of how much of the conversation in the past 12 months, at least, like, there's been a healthy portion, a healthier portion than at any time in this industry's history that I can remember, of people talking about the impact of private fleets, you know, and how much private fleets had grown during COVID, and how they were pulling so much demand out of the marketplace, and really also adding supply. Like, private fleets are a double whammy for like an intermediary marketplace, right? Because they add supply and remove demand.
Mm-hmm.
And owning trucks is the worst. You know, these retailers, I mean, Walmart may not, right? I mean, you know, Amazon may not, right? These folks that have incredibly high predictable volumes, kind of no matter what, they may not make changes to that. But I'd be willing to bet that Target, who's, you know, profitability is suffering immensely and has to make big changes, and a lot of other major retailers that, you know, are really starting to see positivity on their, you know, kind of top line numbers, that they're going to take another look at that private fleet, you know, decision that they made during COVID, and start to really reevaluate, like, oh, wait, you know, these drivers are now super expensive. You know, there's our insurance costs are, you know, up 30-40%, but yeah, you know, to where they were before we made this call. There's probably, you know, an additional risk factor to balance. I would imagine those things take longer to peter out than, you know, your average MC number just shutting down and moving back to
right
Honduras.
There's always a breaking point, right? And I think we saw that, you know, not to get too topical, but this week, I forget the name of the carrier, but they were the number one carrier for the U.S. Postal Service for like the last 25 years or something like that.
Oh, yeah. 10 roads.
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, it was 1,000 or 10,000 trucks or something like that. And they owned 60% of the U.S. Okay. So at some point, yeah, you would think in 1970 or whatever, when they got in with the U.S. Postal Service, it was a gravy train with biscuit wheels, baby. And now here we are. And it's like, oh, ever heard of this thing called email? That's impacted things. And, oh, you know, people don't want junk mail anymore. So that's changed significantly. And all of a sudden the gravy train starts drying up, and you've got 1,000 trucks that are operating all these routes, and you got to figure it out. So it can happen quickly, or that maybe that didn't happen that quickly, but, you know, there is a tipping point at where it makes sense. I mean, I think we probably saw that with like the e-commerce boom, you know, that's still happening right now. And these retailers have decided to build, you know, warehousing and store spaces. But again, we're getting off topic a little bit. But again, there's a tipping point for all this stuff. And like you said, the cost can't just rise forever and expect something not to change. So watch this space. We'll talk about it for our 2027 predictions. But let's dive into, Andrew, to the CPG specifically. Like, do you have any ideas around private label brands or more competition within that space or sustainability? What are you seeing in the CPG market specifically?
Yeah, I mean, so these, you know, these things over the years, I think if there's something that like has kept me up at night the most over the years, outside of like just the general ongoing panic attack of owning a freight company, is like every time there's a downturn, private label numbers start, you know, kind of skyrocketing, and like the whole world is like, wow, private label's really taking over, and like, you know, it's really dominating it's the only growing, you know, sort of segment inside of these retail outlets. And so I've tried as I've aged to react a little bit less like viscerally to these environments, but you know, it is sort of a steady erosion where private label does, you know, if you zoom out again over kind of 20 or 30 years, like private label does continue to take, you know, kind of more and more wallet share. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it happens, like the catalyst is every time there's a big, you know, kind of inflation spike, or every time there's a, you know, a recession or a, you know, a contraction in the economy, that, you know, people pivot into these brands. And as a result of that, these retailers have gotten really good at it. Right. And so I, you know, I think that those private label brands will continue to hold their market share by and large that they've gained over the last few years. But at the same time, you know, the consumer, the American consumer is just unstoppable. And it's an unstoppable force. At the low end of the consumer market seems to be where all the tightness is right now. I think that explains why there's a little bit of an overweight effect from private label, right, across like kind of all categories. I think as the economy, you know, at least hopefully at that lower end of the income spectrum starts to loosen up for folks, whether that's because, you know, payrolls improve, or because, I mean, costs don't go down, but, you know, if spending power improves, meaning payrolls go up faster than costs, that you'll see that start to level out a little bit. At the same time, you know, the American consumer is kind of always looking for better, you know. I think that the tastes and preferences are, they shift, you know, really consistently here. You know, I don't know what it's like in older cultures than ours, but I could imagine that there's a little bit less like dynamism on food innovation, right? Like, if your culture is thousands of years old and you have cultural foods that you've eaten for thousands of years,
right,
you probably don't need, you know, a new flavor of potato chips to come out every, you know, 7 seconds. But, you know, when you're a 250-year-old culture and you don't have those kinds of, you know, ingrained traditions, like, you know, we look for innovation constantly. And so, you know, for that reason, like, I'll always be optimistic for the CPG marketplace. It's a place where great innovators, great ideas, and great entrepreneurs really, you know, always have a chance to come in and you know, shoulder themselves out some space.
If you were suggesting how a CPG brand could best stand out in 2026, what would you tell said brand?
I would tell said brand the same thing I would have told said brand in 2016, which is be on the shelf. You know, companies run, you know, promos for product that moves. Product that's on the shelf is product that moves.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's the easiest way to ingrain yourself in a positive way with your retailer and with your end consumer, is to consistently be where, to consistently meet your end consumer where they are, which is at, you know, whatever grocery or retail outlet has the product market fit that matches your specific product. You know, I wouldn't want to comment on consumer trends, you know, beyond that, mostly because my opinions are not usually those of the broader marketplace.
I want to add to that TikTok. Every brand that's been on TikTok, Shark Tank, gets noticed, goes into somewhere, and following private label brands. Because to me, private label brands are effective delegation. Mm-hmm. They're outsourcing the right things, they have the right colors, they have the right placement on the shelves, they make sure that things are there on time. You rarely see a private label product for that retailer unavailable. So I think those are all basically what you just said, Andrew, now that I'm realizing, re-saying it, so I apologize. But
no, that's a good,
just adding
that's
to
a
them.
Good call out, though, that like, if you, yeah, like if you want an example of why you should be on the shelf, take a look at how utterly rare it is for a private label to not be on the shelf.
Yeah.
They're not on the shelf because no one bought it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the shelf is never empty or is never full because no one's buying that stuff.
That nature's basket pasta is always there, Teddy.
Always there.
Yeah. Like I, you know, it's funny because I would imagine that might be the mindset of, it probably was my mindset at some point of like, man, like, no one ever buys this stuff. It must suck. And you know, the reality is that, like,
everybody buys it. It's just replenished better than everything else.
It's always in your face.
And, and everything is run so efficiently.
Yeah.
That, like, look, if something isn't getting bought, it's definitely not on the store shelf next week. It's just not. And so, you know, if you're seeing it and it's on the shelf, it's because that brand knows, you know, what the hell they're doing from a customer supply chain perspective. And it's because the retailer, as everyone should expect, is running their business well. And that goes back, you know, Teddy, to what, and really, I guess, both of you, when we've been customer facing, like, whenever we've talked to sort of larger markets, whenever we speak at a show, it's always about, like, you should expect that from the DC to the store shelf, that your retailer operates perfectly. And that may not be that may not always be the truth, but at the end of the day, the only way you can plan your business and the only way that you can actualize those projected sales based on the, you know, the deals that you signed with retailers to start the year is for you to assume that and operate that way. And 99.9% of the time, you're going to be rewarded for that. Like, assume that if I get it, that if my product is due in the store if I'm going to have empty shelves on Monday based on, you know, throughput, and the DC wants my product on the Thursday before, that retailer has it nailed. And that, yeah, if that stuff is not there on Thursday, you will have empty shelves on Monday. But if it is, you won't. And operating to that level of perfection on your side to mirror what that retailer's doing, I mean, that really is the game for these guys, in my opinion.
Boom. You heard it here first, last, and everywhere in between. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up. So just to review real quick, we think there's going to be a slight decrease in the supply. The demand is going to stabilize, if you will, and we're starting to see kind of back to pre-COVID numbers. Certainly the CPG brands are figuring out the way, but as always, get the product onto the shelf. It's always about delivering to your customers and owning that process and finding a partner like Zipline to help you out. We touched on tariffs a little bit. There is going to be a reference to a tariff tracker in the show notes, so take a look at that. Reminder to everybody, these are just predictions. Anything can happen in 2026. As always, thank you for listening. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify. Andrew, thank you for joining us once again. We'll see everybody next year in 2026.